I have to go upstairs and record something again, so...
Quiet.
Do not...
smash anything.
And do not disturb.
Do not disturb.
Do not come into your room.
You're listening to Pandemic, a podcast from RTE News and Current Affairs on the COVID-19 crisis. I'm Colm O'Mungoyne, and each week I'll be talking to RTE's correspondents, reporters and others to bring you news, updates and analysis you can trust. We can guarantee you a high quality of information. Sound quality, on the other hand, might vary somewhat. The correspondents and I will be recording this in many cases on mobile devices from home, so please do bear with us. It's Thursday, February 11th, episode 75. We learned today that Ireland's tight restrictions will probably continue until Easter, with gradual returns to school possible throughout March. Recorded coronavirus cases in Ireland have exceeded 206,000, a rise of about 6,000 since last week's episode. Deaths in that time have risen by 260 and stand at over 3,800. Around the world, according to figures from Johns Hopkins University, around 70,000 people have died in the past week, bringing the total deaths around the world to around 2.37 million, while recorded cases have risen by 3 million to over 107 million. Now, there has been some peevishness, to say the least, about vaccine rollout in the European Union. So, the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen was in front of the European Parliament yesterday, Wednesday, to explain the Commission's approach. Irish MEPs were particularly interested.
And as far as the mechanism goes, allow me a word on the island of Ireland. The bottom line is that mistakes were made in the process leading up to the decision. And I deeply regret that. But in the end, we got it right. And I can reassure you that my commission will do its utmost to protect the peace of Northern Ireland, just as it has done throughout the entire Brexit process.
So what was she talking about? What is the Commission's vaccine approach? Why was she explaining it? Why were MEPs demanding explanations? And what, in the name of Schuman, is Article 16? Let's ask our Europe editor in Brussels, Tony Connolly. All right, Tony, how are you?
Good, Colm. Yeah, it's been a while since we talked about the pandemic. We've been talking about Brexit, but...
And we will again tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Thursday, when this podcast is published.
Yes. Lots to talk about there, but also lots to talk about in terms of vaccines and the European Union and that whole sorry saga. So we can cast a gimlet eye over this whole approach by the EU evolved and was started.
Yeah, well, why don't we do that? Why don't we have a look at how the Commission developed its approach in the first place before we get to Ms. von der Leyen in front of the Parliament and defending the European Commission's position? We might as well get into what the European Commission position is.
Yeah, so when the pandemic hit in the spring, of course, everyone was talking about the need for a vaccine, and the EU put aside something like 2.7 billion euro to try and help develop vaccines. And, you know, as time went on, there were lots of vaccine trials and projects around the world, I think 160 altogether, to try and, you know, be the first company to develop a COVID vaccine. And initially, four countries, Germany, France, Italy and Spain, created this vaccine alliance to buy vaccines from pharmaceutical companies that looked like they were going to be, you know, in the front runners of getting a vaccine. But there was resistance from other member states and the European Commission, who said, look, you know, if all 27 member states are essentially in a free for all to buy vaccines and negotiate with pharmaceutical companies, we'll have a repeat of what happened in 2009 with the SARS epidemic at the time, when that whole approach of every man for itself ended up with countries owning far too much vaccines and, you know, at a very high price and so on. So it was agreed that the European Commission would negotiate on behalf of the EU as a whole. So essentially use the weight and economic heft of the European Union to negotiate with Big Pharma, get a good deal in terms of numbers and price. And that was really the approach they took. Now, obviously, they didn't know which company was going to get across the finishing line first. This is all back in sort of May, June time. So they spread the risk over 7 or 8 companies, and one of those was AstraZeneca. There was Pfizer-BioNTech as well, Moderna, CureVac in Germany, and so on. Now, this all seemed like a great idea. Member states seemed to be fairly in tune and on board with this. But the moment something goes wrong with this approach, then the tables get turned very quickly. And clearly what happened was that a combination of the UK having negotiated its contract with AstraZeneca first, because it had this already had this tie-in with Oxford University, and also the UK going for emergency approval. So in other words, not waiting 3 or 4 weeks for the EMA to approve it, but giving it an approval itself by its own regulator. Then the UK had a head start, and its contract with AstraZeneca was up and running more quickly. And it started to get doses more quickly and started vaccinating its population more quickly, as did Israel and as did the United States.
Right. Israel was vaccinating its population with Pfizer-BioNTech, and there had also been production delays on that front as well.
Yes, for Europe there had been a production delay. But when this turned politically for Ursula von der Leyen was in December, because Der Spiegel had a big article out saying that, okay, the Commission was kind of entering the lottery back in June, but in November there were clear indications that both AstraZeneca and Pfizer-BioNTech were going to be successful. And at that point, the Commission didn't buy as many doses as they could have. And there were allegations as well that the Commission was favouring Sanofi, which is a French company, because of pressure from Paris to, support that particular project. This built up a head of steam of criticism in the German press about what the EU was doing, what the Commission was doing. And that meant that Ursula von der Leyen was already under pressure when January started. By that stage, the UK had already been vaccinating for about a month. Vaccine numbers were very slow to get off the ground in the EU. And then Pfizer-BioNTech said that they had to slow down their production because of, the Commission had started to order more doses there. They had to repurpose their factory in Belgium. And then the big shocker, which was in the middle of January, AstraZeneca suddenly on a Friday afternoon told the European Commission, look, by the way, we're only going to give you a quarter of what we promised in the first 3 months of the year. That meant only 30 million doses and not 80 million doses. So that was when things turned very nasty between the Commission and AstraZeneca. And then everything got very public and they had a huge big fight with the company. And then that led to the Article 16 issue, which
we never really sit down and have a conversation for long before it turns.
Without Brexit.
I know, yeah. But exactly. It is actually, we're not shoehorning it in on this front.
It is genuinely.
There was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing between them and between the Commission and AstraZeneca. The Commission demanding that a contract, which was heretofore going to remain confidential, that it be published so that the terms and conditions could be scrutinised by all and sundry. And then there was umbrage taken that AstraZeneca wasn't going to provide them with vaccines from its British factories, despite the fact that Britain had got AstraZeneca vaccines from the European factories, and therefore the Commission came under pressure to stop vaccines being produced in Europe going to third countries until contracts in Europe were fulfilled. And then we got to this triggering of Article 16. How would it even have applied to this?
Yes, well, just to go back a little bit, what really escalated this dispute between the Commission and the company was an interview that the chief executive of AstraZeneca, Pascal Soriot, gave to two European newspapers, essentially saying that this was not the fault of AstraZeneca, the fact that they had fallen short of their delivery promise. This was entirely within the contractual obligation to use best efforts to meet delivery schedules, and essentially that there had been problems at the Belgian facility which had caused this shortfall in doses. And furthermore, the UK had got all of its doses because, again, it had entered the contract earlier. Any production problems they had in the UK had been ironed out earlier, and therefore this unfortunately meant that Europe was not getting the hind tit as such, but it was not contractually as in as safe a position as the UK had been. Now, this really angered the EU because they were saying that the contract clearly showed that AstraZeneca had to meet its delivery targets using 4 facilities, 2 in the UK, which in fact were going to provide the bulk of the doses, and one in Belgium and one in Germany. So they took real exception to this idea that there was some kind of hierarchy whereby the UK got all its doses and the EU didn't. And that was when the EU said, publish the contract and we will be vindicated by that contract. And they did, in fact, publish the contract on the morning of January 29th. And again, it looked like the EU was correct that the contract did oblige AstraZeneca to use the two UK factories. And furthermore, the best efforts obligation related to not to actual production schedules, but to the fact that the vaccine itself may not be approved. So they had to make best efforts to get the vaccine approved on time and so on. But once it was approved, the Commission was arguing we had spent hundreds of millions of euro helping AstraZeneca develop the vaccine and helping them produce it. So therefore, you know, we need to know that we're getting what we ordered, that they live up to their promises. And there was certainly a suspicion by the Commission that AstraZeneca had been filtering vaccine doses out of Europe over to the UK, and those doses should really, under contract, have stayed in the EU. And that was when the Commission said, OK, we're going to introduce a transparency mechanism so we will know what doses are going where and why, and we will know that if contracts are being undermined by the, you know, the leak of vaccine doses outside of the European Union.
It was quite a hard transparency mechanism, wasn't it, though? Because the proposals effectively amounted to an export control. If you are looking at where vaccines are going, and if you are saying that the European supply chains have to be supplied, then in effect, it winds up being an export control.
Well, in fact, what the Commission originally had in mind and what member states had in mind was simply a transparency mechanism so that everyone could see what was going where and whether or not, you know, consignments leaving a Belgian factory going to a third country like the UK, whether that was in conflict with a contract that the EU had with AstraZeneca or any other pharmaceutical company. Now, there was a short period before the 29th when this was being worked on, but it's clear that the Commission came under pressure from France and Germany, who really, at this stage, because of the political backlash at home, wanted to show they were getting tough with Big Pharma. And at that point, early in that week, the Commission presidents decided that this should not be just a transparency mechanism, it should be a trade instrument. And that's when things were shoved onto the desk of Valdis Dombrovskis, the trade commissioner, who of course succeeded Phil Hogan. And then his department was dragooned reluctantly into this whole project. They thought this is a health matter, nothing to do with trade. But in the event, von der Leyen insisted this has to be a trade instrument, which is a much tougher instrument legally. It means the Commission can take very swift action. It doesn't have to consult member states. It can just use these instruments at its disposal. And that's what happened. But it wasn't until late on Friday afternoon that the Article 16 part of this got dragged into the mix, because on the Friday morning of the 29th, the regulation that was circulated among the cabinets in the European Commission didn't have the Northern Ireland part in it. It was only at a certain point that officials in a couple of the different directorates general thought, hang on a second, this Northern Ireland protocol issue could be a loophole here, so we have to fix it.
Right. Well, so just explain in brief then, what is Article 16 and why did they think it had to be invoked? The Northern Ireland Protocol, they were worried that vaccines coming to Ireland might leak their way into the UK, despite the fact that the UK seems amply supplied for. So it seems an almost academic consideration. But nonetheless, they were afraid of things leaking, is it, from the Irish Republic into the UK, and they wanted to stop that.
Well, it wasn't even going that far. I mean, Article 16 is the safeguard clause in the Northern Ireland Protocol. It's a standard clause in free trade agreements, although not all free trade agreements would have something like this. But for example, the treaty that links the EU with EFTA, the free trade area, has a similar clause. And the idea is that if, for example, there is a sudden surge in a particular product under a free trade agreement that does sort of unforeseen damage to an economically vulnerable sector of the economy, then you can pull this lever and say, we need to stop that. We need to have countermeasures to stop this particular flood of products. In one famous case, it was Norwegian salmon, which was flooding into the British and Irish markets under the EEA treaty. So it's a trade measure which allows you to just call a halt. But you have to, you know, enter into discussions with the other party, see if there are other ways of solving the issue. What happened in this case was that, again, this was simply about requiring batches of vaccines that were being made in a factory in Belgium or the Netherlands to have export authorizations if they were leaving the EU. The company would have to tell the local customs, we're exporting these vaccines. Do you need to check if this runs counter to any contract the EU has with these companies? If it doesn't, then the exports can go ahead. They've got authorization. If it does fall foul of a contract the EU has with AstraZeneca, then they can be stopped, right? So because that particular authorization requirement would not apply if stuff was moving between member states and otherwise, in other words, within the single market, then under the protocol, you can't block any EU exports to Northern Ireland because it is regarded as if it's a single market member. But then someone thought, well, you also have this provision under the protocol that there can't be any hindrance to trade between Northern Ireland and Great Britain. So therefore, that's a potential loophole or anomaly. So in that sense, the regulation said, you know, in that situation, the European Commission could invoke Article 16, the safeguard measure, to make sure there isn't a problem. So all that would have happened would have been that any batches of vaccines going to Northern Ireland from a Belgian or Dutch factory, they would have had to also get this authorization before the batches left the factory for Northern Ireland, even though France or Italy or wherever wouldn't have had to get that authorization. So in a sense, this would only have bitten at the factory, there was no provision in this for checks at the border. So the problem was that once this got out, it was depicted as, the EU is putting a hard border on the island of Ireland. Therefore, you know, all sorts of inferences were derived from that. And then we had the huge political explosion afterwards.
Right. Some of which we'll probably still be talking about in the other podcast, Brexit Republic, tomorrow.
Hopefully.
Anyway, Article 16 in the event was taken off. And this brings us to Ursula von der Leyen standing up in front of the European Parliament yesterday and speaking, was it trilingually? At least bilingually, from the bits I saw of it anyway, and going through a justification both of the Commission's approach and an apology for the consideration, I suppose, of putting Article 16 on the table and it being put erroneously, as they're saying now, into the document.
Yes, so, I mean, this was a, you know, a head of steam was building up of criticism of Ursula von der Leyen, especially in the German media. People were still concerned about why things were taking so long. They were upset about the kind of very graphic comparisons between Europe's rollout and, you know, the UK and Israel and so on. And they wanted answers. And then, of course, in the middle of all this, the Article 16 thing blew up and that caused problems as well. So I suppose she eventually, under pressure, agreed to appear before MEPs to justify the EU's approach. And, you know, she staunchly defended this idea of the EU pooling its resources to negotiate on behalf of member states with pharmaceutical companies. And yes, of course, she said we authorised late, but there's a very good reason for that. We were injecting biologically active substances into healthy individuals, and we have to take the precautionary approach. We have to wait for the European Medicines Agency to do its work and to make sure these are safe. And of course, in Europe, as you know, vaccine scepticism is higher than anywhere else in the world. So that's an important consideration. She did say that the Commission had been overly optimistic and overly confident that vaccine doses would be delivered when they were supposed to be delivered. But again, that's not necessarily an apology on behalf of the Commission. That's, you know, again, blaming the pharmaceutical companies for not meeting the targets.
Right. They don't have a lot of experience in this area because health and public health specifically is a national competence rather than a European Commission one. And one of the criticisms has been made is that the European Commission is excellent at cutting trade deals and all of the haggling and negotiating that's involved in that. But the same expertise is maybe not as conducive to the speedy purchase and procurement of vaccines when it's needed, because the haggling over price and liability, although, you know, it remains to be seen whether they were vindicated in that approach over liability, particularly whether that was the correct approach in this case, given that Israel, by contrast, went all in, paid over the odds, and even agreed to supply Pfizer-BioNTech with quite an amount of data on the vaccine rollout in that country.
Yes. Now, that is the central allegation that is levelled, especially in the German media, that, yes, of course, back in the spring, the Commission was hedging its bets on a basket of different companies. But in the autumn, when I think The Lancet and Nature started to pin more hopes on two or three of the key competitors in the vaccine race, at that point, the Commission should have bought more. Head of BioNTech said that he offered more. The Commission said, no, thank you. But this has been absolutely staunchly refuted by Sandra Gallina, who is the Secretary General of the Health Division in the Commission, who was the lead negotiator. She said that publicly, all of the doses that they could have bought at the time, they bought. And the contracts were staggered for different quarters, and they could only buy what they could buy according to what was available for the different rollout of the different quarters of 2021. So that debate has not really been resolved, and you know that will still hang over the von der Leyen Commission. And the hope now is that as the vaccine rollout does pick up speed in the second quarter, when you know the bottleneck should open up and much higher doses should flow, then politically this starts to fade into the distance.
Right. And it's back on national governments. It comes down to their competence in rolling out vaccines in their own individual countries and how they handle that, presumably. But going back to the treatment of Ursula von der Leyen by Irish MEPs in particular, she wasn't around to hear all of their questions, but what were the questions they were directing at her?
Well, there was quite a bit of anger directed at Ursula von der Leyen over the Article 16 issue. I mean, I think in general, across the parliament, the whole Article 16 thing was, you know, extremely graphic. People who may not have followed the Northern Ireland Protocol negotiations in great detail knew that this was a huge mistake by the Commission. I think a lot of people felt that it unfortunately gave Boris Johnson the moral high ground for once. And this really rankled, for Irish MEPs. Quite the achievement, exactly. But for Irish MEPs, this, and for the Irish government as well, this was an extremely serious mistake. MEPs registered in quite angry terms. Chris McManus of Sinn Féin said, you know, how could nobody have picked up the phone to Dublin or London or Belfast? And this has coincided with a letter from 7 Irish MEPs saying that we now need to have structures in place. We need the European Parliament to have a delegation to the Northern Ireland Assembly and vice versa. And, you know, they want much, you know, a lot more solid structural connective tissue, as they call it, between Northern Ireland and the EU institutions, because of, you know, the need to avoid something like this happening again.
Right. So finally then, with regard to the von der Leyen Commission, was this strike one in effect? They got away with this one, but their handling of future crises, and indeed their further handling of this particular crisis, might not be viewed as benignly, or they may not get away with as gentle treatment by the European Parliament and member states.
Well, the thing is that you know, by the time she appeared before the European Parliament, I think member states were conscious of the extreme criticism of Ursula von der Leyen from all quarters, knowing in a sense, you know, with the counterfactual, what would have happened if the EU hadn't, you know, negotiated as a bloc, you know.
I suppose we had a dry run of that with PPE and ventilators at the beginning of this, so they might have had some idea. That gives us at least some insight on, as you mentioned, SARS as well.
Yes, well, I mean, the view of small member states was that they would not have been able to afford or get in the volumes they needed the vaccines that the Commission was able to negotiate with these member states, with these pharmaceutical companies. So there was a bit of circling of the wagons anyway by member states, and certainly no capitals have called for her resignation. Some MEPs did on the far right. On the left of the European Parliament, the concern was more about developing companies,
developing countries. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, so in a sense, you know, she escaped with a fairly comfortable, you know, ride through the Parliament, but it certainly has damaged her legacy, if nothing else.
Right. Okay, listen, thanks a million, Tony. We'll chat to you tomorrow on Brexit Republic, the other podcast.
We will indeed.
All right,
cheers. We'll talk then.
Good luck.
Thanks, Tony.
Bye-bye. And that's it for this week's episode. And from me, Colm O'Mungoin. You can contact me with feedback on colm.omongain@rte.ie or on Twitter @ Colm O'Mungain. Until next week, take care, stay safe. Thanks for listening.